Veronica could not see her way through the maze, and she realized that Lucas, in the strange, morbid, life in death and death in life to which he had condemned himself, might well pass beyond the power of any aid, human or divine, and be drawn into the gulfs of chaos, whence there is no return. Smoke rising from the kitchen chimney showed that breakfast was at last underway, and Veronica was turning towards the house when a footstep attracted her attention, and she saw, approaching through the dew-laden shrubberies, a figure voluminously garbed in an old-fashioned Inverness cape and laden with an antique Gladstone bag, and in another minute her old friend of the long white beard stood before her and grasped her hand in greeting. Amazed beyond words at this unexpected visitation, Veronica entirely forgot the duties of hospitality, and it was not until the old man had led her into the billiard room and divested himself of his wrappings that she inquired the reason for his journey. He shot a keen glance at her from under his heavy grey brows. "Did you not expect anyone?" he said. Veronica looked at him blankly for a moment, and then, remembering the promised visitor of her vision dreams, hesitated, uncertain whether to speak or not, for, though she herself was fast becoming more certain of the reality of her experiences and had ceased to attribute them to imagination, it had never occurred to her that anyone else might share them, and she feared to expose herself to ridicule or suspicion should she reveal her knowledge. "Yes," she said slowly, "I was expecting someone, but I was not quite certain. I did not know it would be you. It took me by surprise when I saw you." The old eyes, strangely brilliant in that faded face, continued to study her acutely. "Who was it told you to expect someone?" he asked blandly. Veronica returned his gaze squarely. She knew that she was being tested. The old man's thoughts were perceptible to her, and she felt that hers were equally so to him. Concealment between them was both useless and needless. "They told me," she said simply. "Then you know them?" She bowed her head. It was sufficient. They understood each other. The old woman appeared with a laden tray, and seeing a second person present, shuffled off to boil another egg. Nothing ever perturbed her or seemed to rouse her curiosity. Had she found the Cham of Tartary confabulating with Veronica, she would have boiled him an egg without question. Lucas had trained her well. The meal was occupied with the courtesies of the table and inquiries as to Veronica's health and other mundane matters. Both felt that there were things to be told that were too momentous to bear the interruptions necessitated by eating, but as soon as the old man was ensconced in one of the big leather armchairs, and his pipe was well alight, he looked across the fireplace to where Veronica occupied the other armchair, and remarked, "Things, I take it, have been happening." He invited confidences, and Veronica determined to burn her boats behind her and give them. "Dr. Latimer," she said, "I am going to tell you the truth. Perhaps you will think I am mad, but it is the truth, whether you believe it or not."
"I expect I shall believe it," the old man replied. "After you left me," Veronica began, "everything was quiet for a little while, and I began to think that I had made a mistake and that death was what most people think it is. But, on the other hand, I felt it was not, and that presently I should be wanted." "You neither heard nor saw anything?" questioned the old man.
"Nothing.
I simply had a kind of feeling, but it was so vague, and so faint, that I could not make out anything definite. One day I happened to put on an old coat that had belonged to Mr. Lucas, and that seemed to put me right back into his atmosphere again, and I knew that he wanted me to go down to his grave. I had never been, because I did not wish to think of him as dead, but when I got that feeling I obeyed it and went." Veronica glanced furtively over her shoulder. "When I went to the graveyard," she said, "I saw four children's graves, all newly made, and this is a tiny village, only one street." She paused and looked sharply at the old man to see what he would make of this statement. He nodded.
"I am not surprised," he said. "There have been other children who have died since then. Two others that I know of. I will tell you about them presently, but I want to tell you about Alec first. I got to know him when I went to the churchyard. He was very kind and showed me where the grave was. It would have been rather trying, all alone. Did they bury Justin in consecrated ground? Asked the old man.
I think so, said Veronica, but not in the old part of the churchyard round the church, but in the new part, over against the river, and right up in the far corner of that.
That accounts for a good deal, said the old man. A modern Anglican consecration is nothing approaching as powerful as one that was done before the Reformation. They would have spared themselves a good deal if they had allowed Justin to lie in the shadow of the church.
Christian charity can rarely be dispensed with safely. Alec walked home with me through the wood. I was rather upset by the visit to the grave, and also I think that he was attracted towards me. After that, he often came to see me, and in the end he asked me to marry him. I think that that was what did it.
Did what? Led to his death, said Veronica, steadying her voice with an effort. We had a dog here, and one night it had a queer kind of seizure and, she hesitated. How could she possibly recount these wild imaginings? And it went mad and broke loose and killed Mr. Butler, she tailed off lamely.
What was done with the dog? Demanded her interlocutor.
They had it shot. And its body. They thought it had hydrophobia, so they sent its body to the destructor at Ambridge.
Good, said the old man, with an air of satisfaction. That is the only thing to do in a case like this.
And after the dog was destroyed, did you have any more trouble?
Yes, said Veronica, slowly. Mr. Lucas came here into this very room, and materialized over the way you are sitting.
Did anyone see him beside yourself?
Not on that occasion, but when they shot the dog a whole lot of people saw him, and the district is simply scared to death, and the old caretaker started drinking and has been drinking ever since.
How did he perform the materialization?
He had got a certain amount of substance from the children he had killed, and he borrows the rest from me.
Borrows?
Yes, he borrows enough to be able to materialize and talk to me, and then returns it and dematerializes when he has finished.
Has he done this often?
4 or 5 times.
What effect does it have on you?
Veronica hesitated.
It does not affect me much at the time, she said at length. In fact, each time he does it, it affects me less, but I find that I am beginning to want to do the same sort of thing to other people. When I went down the lane the other day, a little child ran out to me, and I picked it up and cuddled it. It seemed to me as if I could feel the vitality radiating from it. The mother ran out and snatched it from me, and I was thankful, for I realized that I was doing just the same thing as Mr. Lucas had done.
The old man pulled at his extinguished pipe for some time before replying. Finally he spoke.
Would it be possible to open Lucas's grave without being observed, or should we be obliged to get a permit from the Home Office?
I should think it would be quite possible, replied Veronica.
But I should not like anything to be done that could hurt Mr. Lucas.
The old man looked at her keenly.
What is the position between you and Lucas? He asked.
There is an old bond, answered the girl.
I thought as much. And what may be the nature of that bond?
We worked together in some of the old temples, and then, later, there was trouble and we drifted apart. But we needed each other.
In fact, I think a great deal of the trouble came from our being apart. He acted as a brain to me, and I was a heart to him. Then in this life we met again, but things were in such a tangle that we can't get them straightened out. Mr. Lucas did all sorts of wrong things with me. He does not care what he does. And even now he is not properly dead, and he dare not die completely, because if he did he would go to some awful place and probably be lost altogether, and the only way he can keep alive is by taking other people's vitality.
Have you ever heard of vampires? Said the old man.
Yes, answered Veronica.
And I have also heard of werewolves.
Silence fell between them.
Finally the girl spoke.
Do you know what the second death means? She asked.
It means the disintegration of the personality, the unit of incarnation, and its absorption by the individuality, the unit of evolution. The personality is as mortal as the body, it is only the spirit which is eternal. The first death is that of the physical form,
and the second definite of the body of desire ensouled by the concrete mind. When that is gone, the abstract mind, ensouled by the divine spirit, abides in its own place, until the time comes for its reincarnation. Why is Mr. Lucas so afraid of the second death? Because that is the day of reckoning whereon the personality has to answer for its doings. Lucas dreads the day of reckoning, and not without reason, either. Lucas never appeared during the hours of daylight. It was only as the darkness came on that he might be expected, so Veronica's showed the old man over her little estate, and pointed out the different objects that were connected with the problem they had to solve. They had visited Lucas's bedroom, where the last blooms of the red rambler shed mildewed leaves upon the windowsill. As the old man gathered them thoughtfully into his hand, Veronica felt that he was surveying the scene with other senses than his five physical ones. They inspected the empty dog kennel, beside which still lay the unbuckled collar attached to its chain, and then, from a discreet distance, they surveyed the cottages in the lane. Finally, they followed the wood path that led to the churchyard and stood beside a mound of rough earth that was slowly subsiding under the autumn rains. For a long time the old man remained bareheaded beside the mound, musing upon who knows what. Finally he knelt and laid upon the wet earth a handful of rain-beaten blooms that he had gathered from the rambler that encircled the dead man's bedchamber. Veronica also knelt, and shaped the dull red flowers into the semblance of a cross. The evening saw them gathered in the familiar billiard room. The wood fire threw its uncertain light, and as soon as the old woman had removed the evening meal, Dr. Latimer extinguished the lamp. In the ordinary way, said the old man, I should not allow you to go into trance without taking the proper precautions, but under the present circumstances we must leave the gates open and allow what will to come through, otherwise we might exclude something which was essential. They had not long to wait. As the flames died down and the logs sank to a red glow, Veronica felt the draining of her substance which showed that her resources were being drawn upon, and once again the cowled figure began to form itself in the shadows. The mist-like exudation condensed itself into floating draperies in the folds whereof hands and features slowly appeared, with pools of illimitable blackness for the eyes. His attention being concentrated upon Veronica, it was not until fully materialized that Lucas perceived the presence of a third person. Instantly his form shot up to twice its normal height, and the draperies spread out into great bat-like wings as he hovered over the venerable white-bearded figure sitting motionless in the depths of the chair. So readily did the tenuous ectoplasm respond to the ensouling mind that great claws sprang out at the ends of the fingers as they stretched towards the throat of their intended victim. They hovered for a moment, irresolute. But the clear brilliance of the blue eyes never wavered under their heavy white eyebrows, and the threatening, overhanging form slowly retreated. The spreading bat wings were indrawn, till at last, in the exact semblance of an Egyptian mummy, Lucas stood upon the defensive. At length the old man spoke. Greeting, my son, in the name of those whom we both serve. A quiver ran through the rigid form confronting him, and a thin fold of drapery seemed to shake itself free from the swathing mummy bands and hang like a long, loose sleeve. Whence come you? Came the questioning voice, as if in some set formula of ritual resonance. From the abyss, came at length the unwilling answer. And whither go you? There was a pause, broken only by the slow ash falling in the fire and the rhythmic breathing of Veronica. The log had burnt through and broken before the answer came, but the old man never stirred. Then Lucas spoke. I am in outer darkness, he said. Blown about by the winds of space. It is useless to ask me whither I am going, for I cannot tell you. Depart, my son, depart, and be at peace, said the old man. Face your reckoning and meet it, and then, when the day of life dawns for you once more, you can return to the path whence you have turned aside. The bat-like wings unfolded themselves threateningly from the drapery as Lucas answered angrily. It is not in your power to bid me depart. I have made good my foothold on the plane of manifestation to that extent at any rate. We can defy you, between us. The old man turned to Veronica. My daughter, he said, It is not in my power to make Justin face his reckoning, as he very truly says, because I cannot drive him out of the form he has built for himself without shattering you, for it is built in part of your substance. But if you will withdraw yourself from him, then I can send him to his own place." Veronica slowly raised herself up in her chair and looked from one to another of the two who confronted her. To her psychic condition, neither of them seemed material, but to be different types of force, each expressed through the vehicle of a mind. The old man appeared to her as a prism, transmitting a ray from a great sun hung in space, but Lucas shone with a phosphorescence, luminous as certain fungi are luminous, with the light of their own putrefaction. "Where will he go?" she said at length. "Where is his own place? Will it be well with him there?" Lucas laughed, and the sound seemed to be taken up by innumerable voices. Every flicker of firelight, every draught of the crazy house seemed to cackle with ghastly merriment. "My own place," he said, "is the dark planet of disintegration, the wandering planet, that has no orbit. There I shall be returned, cell by cell, molecule by molecule, atom by atom, to the primordial substance whence I arose, for it will not be purgatory I go to, but annihilation, for I have given myself unreservedly to darkness." "Are you quite sure, my son, that you have given yourself unreservedly to evil?" said the old man. "It is not my fault if I haven't," snarled Lucas. Veronica's voice cut across their dispute. "I could not send him to destruction, Dr. Latimer. I may be very foolish and very wrong, but I really could not do it. I do not think he can do anyone any harm if I want to help him, and perhaps if we give him time, he may have a chance to put things right." "Time is the one thing we cannot give him, my dear. There is no slack water in the cosmic tides. He must go one way or the other, back into life or out to the death of the soul. Then why can he not come back, if such a thing is possible?" "Because he can only come back through you, and then you will be where he is now."
"Is that so very terrible?" said Veronica.
"It is," said Lucas, briefly. "For the second time," said the old man, concentrating his gaze upon the shrouded figure before him. "Where are you going, my son?" Lucas did not answer. "Do you intend to go to your reckoning?" The batwings folded close around the swathed figure and a shudder seemed to run through it.
"Not if I can help it."
"Then do you propose to maintain yourself in manifestation by means of the life forces of this girl?" There was a long pause as Lucas seemed to be unable to come to a decision.
"It will have to be one or the other," said the old man.
"I know that," said Lucas. He looked at Veronica as she lay back in the big chair, and she leant towards him anxiously.
"I do not know what it all means," she said, "but I shall not send you away. I said I would stand by you and I will. I cannot let you hurt the children, but I will not send you away myself."
Lucas smiled a crooked smile.
"I may have to send myself away, little Veronica."
The old man became tensely still in his chair, and seemed hardly to breathe as he waited for the next words from the grey shadow in the corner. The fire had died to darkness before they were spoken. "There are some things," the words came slow and heavy, like drops of water falling in a cavern, "which cannot be done." Again silence fell upon the room, unbroken by any sound, within or without, and finally the voice of Lucas spoke again.
"If it were anyone but you, Veronica, no, it cannot be done."
Then the voice, gathering strength, rang like a bell, and into it came a note that was almost joy.
"This is goodbye, Veronica.
Goodbye and God bless you, go free and be happy. Forget as much as you can and forgive the rest. Or, if you must remember, then remember that I loved you." Veronica rose up in the darkness and faced him, and the old man, watching, saw that the child Veronica was no more, for the soul which had lived through the ages had at last entered into full possession of its tenement.
"I shall forget nothing, and there is nothing to forgive. This thing had to be, and we have worked it out together. If you go to the dark planet, I will go with you, and if I remain here, you will return to me."
"It is not for us to say what we will do," said Lucas. I go to those who will deal with me as they see fit. And throwing up his hand, he cried in a voice of evocation, "For I go to my reckoning." The utterance of the words seemed to bring with them a sudden change. The cowled grey figure was shot through as with streaks of fire, and crimson fumes rolled up all around like the light of a burning city. Once again the cackling laughter rose up from every shadow and crevice of that haunted house, and peal upon peal of hooting merriment answered from high overhead where the night clouds raced across the face of the moon. It seemed as if every patch of gloom harbored triumphant evil, and Lucas had been delivered into its hands. A blast of furious gale struck the house broadside till the place rocked on its foundations, rafters and beams creaking as if the whole crazy structure were coming down. The windows, torn bodily from their frames, crashed onto the floor in a shower of flying glass. Something that was thicker than the darkness swept into the room with the gale, passed swiftly over all its surfaces, touching them with intangible tentacles till it found that which it sought, and then swept out again as it had come. The gale sank as suddenly as it had arisen. The room, vacated of all presences, was simply a shattered human dwelling place wrecked by a cyclone. No trace remained of the forces that had swept it or the passions that had invoked them, save only that an intolerable stench of putrefaction rolled up in waves from the corner where the great cowled figure had stood. Chapter 13. The terrific wind died away as suddenly as it had arisen, leaving the room in utter darkness. Veronica could hear the old man fumbling for the matches. The little pale flame lit up at last, a feeble gleam among the shadows. The lamp, smashed to fragments, lay in a corner, and the old doctor turned slowly round, seeking for something to light. As he turned, he suddenly stopped with a half-strangled exclamation, for, framed in the shattered window space, stood the figure of a man. They both gazed at it in speechless amazement as the dying flame of the match illumined the strange, impassive countenance, exaggerating with its nickering shadows the deep lines of the parchment skin, the hollow cheeks, the high cheekbones, the great jaw and the lofty forehead. The eyes, deep set and glittering, were those of the hawk. He gave the impression of tremendous power, utterly impersonal, completely under control. Veronica had seen enough of the members of the mysterious fraternity in whose headquarters she had been concealed to recognize the sign manual of its discipline. The glittering eyes of Dr. Latimer, the cat-like movement of Lucas, the sense of impersonal power of the hard-faced man, all these she saw developed to a far greater degree and concentrated in a single individual. She knew without telling that this man had to do with the fraternity, but was far higher, far bigger, than the men she had so far encountered in the handling of its affairs. He as far transcended Lucas as Lucas transcended herself, and she knew without telling that he was not only a man to be obeyed, but to be trusted. The match burnt itself out in the old man's fingers while he gazed speechless at this apparition, and the room was once again in darkness and silence. The voice of the stranger broke the spell. "You know me?" "Yes, you are the third," said Dr. Latimer. "Quite right. I am the third. Now I suggest that you strike a light. There are matters I wish to discuss with you." Veronica could hear the footsteps of the stranger as he crossed the bare parquet. He moved in the darkness with the precision of a man who could see where he was going, and the clink of metal told her that he had laid hands on the two brass bedroom candlesticks that stood on the table near the door. By the time Dr. Latimer had got the match alight, he was standing before him, holding the candlesticks. Veronica could now examine him at her leisure. The loose frieze overcoat he wore exaggerated his height and the massiveness of his frame, but as he laid it aside she saw that he was clad in the ordinary lounge suit of civilization. Unlike some students of the occult, the members of this fraternity, which really possessed power and knowledge, did not seek to be impressive, but rather to conceal themselves under the bushel of convention in order to pursue their studies undisturbed. He knelt before the smoldering hearth and drew the ashes together gently, as if handling living creatures. The instantaneous blazing of the fire under his hand seemed to Veronica of a piece with his power to move in the darkness. He might wear ordinary clothes, but he was no ordinary man. For the first time he looked directly at her as she sat motionless in her big chair, as she had sat ever since his entrance.
"Come, my child," he said, laying his hand on hers. "Draw up to the fire and warm yourself. You are cold."
That kindly touch, which had nothing of a man's familiarity in it, told Veronica yet more about the stranger. Dr. Latimer had brains and kindness, but no strength. The hard-faced man had brains and strength, but no kindness, and even as she thought of her old opponent, a step sounded on the gravel of the terrace, and his burly figure stood framed in the window. He looked just as surprised to see the man who had called himself the third as Dr. Latimer had looked, and Veronica had a secret suspicion that he was not any too pleased. He was not the type of man who would take kindly to yielding, and the stranger would certainly rule any group in which he found himself. On the other hand, she knew intuitively that Dr. Latimer was immensely relieved at the intervention of the unknown man, and quite ready to trust the issue into his hands. "If you will be good enough to come in, Mr. Fordyce," said that personage, "we will be able to close the window." The hard-faced man gave a grunt that sounded rather resentful of even this reasonable request, but nevertheless he did as he was asked, and lent his assistance to secure the mouldering shutters that threatened to fall bodily into the room. No questions were asked or answered, but nevertheless, Veronica, with her quickened intuition, felt certain that each of these three men had obeyed a silent summons, though whether that summons had issued from the third, or whether he, too, had been summoned, she could not tell. They were gathered in a semicircle round the now blazing fire, and two pipes and a cigar were rapidly obscuring the atmosphere, and still no word was spoken. She felt that these men were sensing the state of affairs, sensing each other, and acting and reacting in a way which she could not divine. She had always thought that occultists were ascetic people who touched neither meat, drink nor tobacco, but Dr. Latimer had always eaten without a murmur whatever the caretaker had chosen to set before him, and the third was smoking a long black cigar that would have put the average man upon his back. They might be psychics, but they were certainly not sensitives. Finally the third spoke. "We must settle this matter as speedily as possible," he said. "Time is an important factor in the case."
"I thought it had been settled," said the hard-faced man, with something that closely approached a sneer.
"I thought so, too," said Dr. Latimer, looking up in surprise. "Lucas, in my hearing, accepted his fate and went out to the judgment hall of Osiris, and was turned back at the gate," said the third, "for his time was not yet come. They would no more accept him than they would accept a murdered man or," he paused significantly, "a suicide."
"Would you consider," said the hard-faced man, "that a criminal who was executed in accordance with the law was a murdered man?"
"The law of the land rules the land," said the third, "and when the race spirit takes a life, it is a death according to the law, and therefore a natural death. Whether it is right or wise to take that life, is another matter. And in any case the issue is one we are not concerned with here, for the law was not invoked. It was a private vendetta, gentlemen, and it is no use pretending otherwise, and the consequences of your rash action you must face, for you have caused a soul to leave its body before its natural term had arrived, and that soul, therefore, walks as surely as any other suicide."
"Why do you keep on emphasizing the word suicide?" asked the man he had called Fordyce, peering sharply at the third.
"Because I do not know what other word to use for a man who voluntarily vacates his body. The makers of dictionaries had not foreseen such an eventuality as the one we are discussing.
No, gentlemen, with all your cleverness you did not even succeed in bagging our friend. He eluded you."
Fordyce gave a sound that was almost a snarl. He was evidently more annoyed to learn that his magic had failed of its purpose than relieved to find that he had not got a crime on his conscience. His character appeared to have undergone a profound change even during the short time that Veronica had known him. The evil of which Lucas had rid his soul seemed to have entered into him.
"The question is, what do you propose to do with our friend?" continued the third.
"He is a member of your lodge, gentlemen, it is your problem. The reason he does not go to his last account is that he is a vampire, said Fordis. If you opened the grave you would probably find his body as fresh as when it was buried.
Precisely, said the third. We all know that. But the question is, what are you going to do about it? You also know the traditional way of dealing with vampires, no doubt, answered his opponent, the sneer appearing openly on the surface of his expression.
I knew it before you were born, said the third, a slow smile stirring the lines of his face.